Welcome to Learn to Live Stress-Free. This is Christine Wright with Dr. Robert Wright Jr., your go-to wellness coaches of www.stressfreenow.info.
Our featured guest today is Tim McChristian, speaking on the power of being consistently consistent. Tim, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Audience, welcome.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Great, Tim. It's wonderful to have you back again. And audience, you are in for a treat because Tim McChristian has wise advice that has been earned the old-fashioned way, and he's going to share that with us today. So, Tim, as the new executive director of the African Leadership Foundation, what are the main objectives you are seeking to accomplish?
Well, the mission of the African Leadership Foundation is directly in support of African Leadership Academy, which is a school based in Johannesburg, South Africa. And the mission of the school is to develop the next generation of ethical leaders in Africa needed to lead the transformation across the continent. And they do that through a two-year intensive program focused on entrepreneurial leadership, African studies, and the Cambridge A-level exams. And then the students go off to college, but the design is that the students will return to Africa to begin their careers, and we have an entire infrastructure in place to get them summer internships back on the continent as well as full-time jobs. My role in leading the foundation here in the U.S., which is the 501c3 organization, is to raise the majority of the funds to support the school and also to support the graduates, of which there are about 300 attending U.S. colleges before they return to Africa to begin their careers.
Great, Tim. That's wonderful. Before we started the call, we talked a little bit about your globetrotting activities, and I think it's the question that came to my mind, and it's something that would be of interest to our audience, is this issue of jet lag. And I thought that your perspective is very, very interesting. I'd like you to share that. I was asking you about how do you handle the jet lag or the travel between New York City and Johannesburg. And so, you know, for many people traveling, say, from New York to L.A. or to San Francisco, they experience a jet lag, the time zone changes, et cetera. So since you have done that kind of high-level traveling over many years, could you just tell our audience how you approach the issue of jet lag and how you able to handle the level of fatigue that could come on a 10, a 15, or even a 20-hour flight?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is, I think, just accepting that it is what it is. So being stressed about it won't change the reality of a 16-hour flight, which is the distance from New York to Johannesburg and also from New York to Tokyo, where I worked for 3 years. So I think that's the first part, that you can't stress about, oh, the flight is 16 hours. Then the reality is you have to do what you can do to control the environment, and that is get up, walk around, drink a lot of liquids, you know, and relax as much as you can. And then the third thing that I've been able to do over the years is I exercise. I try to exercise immediately when I land, which has allowed me to reset my body for a reason for it to be tired. And that, you know, gives me a good night's sleep and lets me reset the local time zone, I think, quicker than perhaps if I didn't have that process. But it's, you know, it's not easy. I mean, there's some flights that are worse than others. If you're in row 4, the flight is usually a lot more comfortable than if you're in row 64. But that, again, is just part of the life that you have to accept. If you're fortunate to be in row 4, enjoy it. If you're in row 64, you have to enjoy that also as best you can.
Tim, the thing that has occurred to me, when I was a wee bit younger, I'm tempted to say how long ago, but let's just say one of the things that I noticed is that when I used to get off the plane, if I was traveling with somebody, if it was a long flight, the time zone changes didn't affect me. And I used to get off the plane and say, oh, let's go on the tour or party or whatever. And then I think it was when I became around 40 or 42 that I remember taking a trip, and it was the first time I had ever experienced jet lag. And I was like, ooh, this doesn't feel good. And so it was the first time it hit me. So I'm wondering, you know, if some people experience jet lag differently. But I think the thing that you mentioned about exercising, that's an excellent tip in terms of doing that, would be a good reset for the body.
Right, and it can be as simple as just walking. You know, when you get to your hotel, go for a walk around the area just to kind of get out in the sunlight. But, you know, I've been flying cross country since I was 14 years old, and so five-hour flights used to be, you know, acceptable and expected. And then when I started transitioning to global travel, you know, and when I began working for IBM, you know, growing from 5 to 8 hours, 9 or 10 hours probably wasn't as extreme. But the idea, again, of doing something when you land just works for me, as opposed to just kind of laying around and letting your body get racked by the reality of a 5 or 6 hour time zone change.
That makes so much sense. Tim, I see a travel show coming on where the three of us will have to share our experiences, because like you, I traveled from the West Indies to New York, from Jamaica to New York as a child, and I think it was easier for me because I was smaller and planes were larger. So when you talk about sitting from one row to the next, and certainly when you worked with IBM and you were traveling to Japan, that's a completely different thing. With the length of that flight, what struck me in your response to Bob was I was surprised when the stewardess kept offering me water, and I didn't realize how important it was to stay hydrated. I told Bob at the time, I said, I feel like a plant, just constantly taking in the water, how important that is.
Now, same. We've actually had a couple of friends, unfortunately, who've had blood clot problems and flying, you know, never directly attributed to the cause of the clots, but it's always coincidental that a couple of them had flown to visit us in South Africa. Another, Debbie's cousin, had flown to visit us in Tokyo, and within a month of that, they had been diagnosed with blood clots, which is a symptom of, you know, your legs being inactive for a long period of time, which you can say is directly attributable to sitting on a flight for 12, 15, 16 hours and not moving around. So it's one of those things that you just have to pay attention to, and you can control it, right? You have to remember to get up and go for a walk around the plane, get up and drink some water, get up and do whatever you need to do. To stay hydrated and mobile.
Thank you. I mean, you're definitely speaking from decades of experience with this. Tim, when you and your wife, Debbie, lived in Japan during your time at IBM, what was it like living in a foreign country as an American? I mean, how fluent were you in the language and the culture, and how did that play out over time?
Yeah, it was one of those unique opportunities we had. I was the first black executive in the history of IBM to ever actually move on an international assignment. And so what I realized was there was nobody to give us some straight talk advice. You know, Debbie immediately asked when I told her we had a chance to move to Tokyo, she said, where am I going to get my hair done? Fair question. But, you know, that's one of those little things, though, that when you talk about the stress of moving in general, which is one of the most stressful events that anybody ever has, is moving. And you talk about moving to a foreign country, as you said, Christine, with the language and everything else, the little basics become major if they're not addressed. So when we moved, we were moving, you know, we're moving with IBM, so it's not like we're moving by ourselves. But the fact is, it was a totally unique experience for us, but we loved it. Because I was a senior executive, the quality of life was outstanding in terms of the apartment and the area of Tokyo we lived in. Our kids both went to the American school in Japan, and it was a great, you know, outstanding private school meant to allow American kids to come in, have a great experience, and ensure they're ready to go back to the U.S. whenever they are ready in terms of academic preparation. You know, both our kids learned Japanese as part of their schooling there, and my son actually kept it up through prep school, college, and he now, to show you how blessed we are, he is actually working at the U.S. Embassy in Tokyo, Japan, and he's fluent in Japanese after studying it for probably 15, 16 years. So it was a unique experience. I was running our Asia Pacific business for IBM. So I had 26 countries. So I was frequently in Australia, Korea, China, India, Singapore, and I had a chance to take the family with me on a number of those travels, so we're able to have some vacation time, so our kids were able to, you know, get a global view at a relatively young age of their life. And as I said, both of them have continued to enjoy that experience as they've grown up. And I do speak a little Japanese, Sokoshi Nihongo, meaning a little Japanese. You have to be able to speak taxi cab Japanese. So whenever you get in a cab in Tokyo, Migi Hidari Masugu Chotomate Kudasai, left, right, straight, please stop. Because it turns out the construction in Japan, houses are not sequentially numbered. So they're numbered by when the house was built. So 10, maybe next to 30, maybe next to 12, maybe next to 28. So the driver won't know necessarily where to stop. So being able to tell them, please stop, becomes one of those critical skills you learn very quickly. And so that was a level of Japanese.
That's what a great story, Tim. I've no one has ever said that before. So that is a
very
key
true
insight.
Yeah. And I actually learned how to say slow down as opposed to stop, because Chotomate Kudasai means gradually, please slow down because we're approaching where we need to stop. I used to say chotomate, which means stop. And so when you start, sometimes you say it, you drive along. This guy puts the brakes on and you fly through the back of the taxi. So the people quickly said, Tim, you need to modify that to, you know, to this other way of saying it, so the driver won't, you know, cause a heart attack for everybody.
I love it.
Well, it seems like you really did learn the key phrases and what you're saying, which is very
it's survival Japanese.
Survival
because, again,
Japanese.
What you also find, the Japanese, they were required to learn English in their studies, and so they would much prefer to speak English to you anyway. So it's very difficult, particularly in the area of town we lived in. Their English was obviously much better than my Japanese, plus they would prefer to speak in English because it helps them, you know, in their practicum. So it was actually a funny thing. I would go in and try to speak a couple of phrases in Japanese, and they would give the answer in very correct English.
I love it. What a great story.
That's a fantastic experience. You know, as you say, it really is the nuances of the culture, because having lived in two cultures myself, you seem like you've covered about 20. But there, it's those small defining ways of behavior that can get you in trouble, or
yes,
you know,
absolutely,
yeah, or make the evening. Now you mentioned the exposure that your children had, and the importance it played in their lives, as it did in your own life. That having this exposure and opportunity to travel, to know what's available in the world, how important that is. Could you tell us how that played out in your children's life and even your own, and where your son and your daughter are today?
As I said, with my son and daughter, they both learned Japanese and attended school in Japan. My son was able to continue it through his 4 years at Andover, his 4 years at Columbia, and then he joined the State Department, and he's been able to continue to have global experiences. So he was based at the U.S. Embassy in Jordan for 2 years, which actually overlapped when we were living in Africa, so we were able to spend time with him there. And now he is beginning his second assignment living in Tokyo, Japan. So he's always had that passion, and he continues to have it. He just left yesterday, actually today, returning back to Japan after vacation here in the U.S. My daughter, you know, was blessed with, again, a great educational foundation, and she continued it at Yale University, and then followed by Columbia Law School, and then she clerked for a federal judge for a year, and now she's a corporate litigator at a large New York law firm. So, you know, both the kids, I think, just were able to benefit from the exposure they had earlier in their life of just unlimited opportunity. I think that's the core of it, whether it's global or domestic opportunity. I think our kids now realize that if they put in the time, and the fact they were blessed to have access to a system that allows them to be successful, and that is a lot of it's financial, but it also is just exposure. They can do anything they want, but the bar is set pretty high, and that's one of the things we haven't backed off on with both our kids in terms of expectations, because they don't have a lot of excuses. They didn't have college loans to worry about, so they didn't have work study like I did, and maybe probably Bob did when we were undergrads. They had no excuses not to focus on their studies, and I think that's worked out very well for both of them.
You know, it certainly has. I remember when I was teaching, a friend of mine wasn't able to do an enrichment program that she was doing, and so I worked with this classroom of third graders, And as part of it, I gave each student a postcard. And they had not been exposed to many things. It was obvious because when I handed out the postcards, they asked me if I was giving them the postcards. And, well, yes, I was. It's just a postcard. But immediately their mind took the next great leap. First, they were cautious about accepting the postcard, and once they realized the postcard was there, their next question to me was I going to take them to these places? And these are postcards from my travel all around the world, so across the United States to California,
yes,
to Europe.
I understand.
And they went from being afraid of accepting the postcard to wondering if I was going to take them to the UK. So certainly exposure does spark, you know, is the beginning of opportunity.
Great, Tim. I know you're a big sports fan and that you're a good basketball player, too, because I remember you blocking my shot a few times when we played pickup games together at the Payne Whitney Gym at Yale. Who are your favorite collegiate teams and favorite professional players and teams?
Well, of course, I have to start off with our Yale Bulldogs, which I had a chance of getting playing on the team for our entire Yale undergrad career, where we got beat by, you know, quite a few points in many places, but it was a great developmental experience. And so we should have made the NCAA last year, but we blew it against Dartmouth and got beat by Harvard in the playoff game. But after that, I just enjoyed the sport. So I'm still a loyal Los Angeles Lakers fan, although they've fallen on hard times lately, but they'll be back. And so I just enjoy the sport. I was able to get engaged with the NBA Africa guys, and I was living over there and attended some of the events that they put on. So I enjoy the sport worldwide. When I was in Tokyo, I played on the IBM basketball team, which played all over Tokyo against other corporations. And, again, seeing how international basketball is was fun. There were some Japanese kids that were much bigger than I was, and they were much younger, too. So they've been watching ESPN and the NBA on TV for a long time, and they got game.
Okay, that's really great. A Laker fan, surprise, huh? living on the East Coast, being a Laker fan.
Considering I'm living in New York, and right now the Knicks are quite humble. It's really no pressure being a Laker fan here in New York City right now.
I'm telling you that I'm not even going to touch that one because that is amazing. What's happened to the New York Knicks. So,
yeah.
In any event, I want you to, you know, because you mentioned exercise, I just want to ask you, in terms of specific stress management techniques besides exercise, I was wondering whether or not do you use any other stress management techniques such as meditation.
It's funny you mentioned that. On Tuesday nights now, I am a regular at what we call men's movement class. Now, I realize how important it is to call it that as opposed to men's yoga. And we try. It's a class full of brothers.
Get away with that.
Five or six of us taught by a brother at a brownstone here on 135th, right around the corner here in Harlem. But I enjoy it. I've tried yoga over the years, you know, when we travel to different places. I try to do yoga, and I was distracted. I wasn't focused. It was not an enjoyable experience, but I actually am really enjoying this men's movement class. It's much more focused on core. In fact, it's all brothers. You know, I feel very comfortable with the group. I'm not distracted. And so that has helped me. I mean, I can definitely see the difference in the flexibility that I've achieved, you know, which complements my regular workouts that I continue to do 3 or 4 times a week. And so I think that's really helped me. It focuses on the breathing, which, again, one of those things I now realize how important it is when you're exercising is to focus on your breathing, because as you breathe, you're able to stretch more and, you know, lift more weights, et cetera. So it's helped me a lot, and I've been doing it now for about six or seven months, and I'm pretty regular.
Great. You know, Tim, I can't tell you that your story gave me such a chuckle, and it is a constant reminder of the advice that some people have given us in terms of speaking, that go wherever people are. So it's interesting that you said that it's called men's movement, not yoga, even though it is yoga. And so the visual that I had in my mind when you said that was of my experience of going to the Harlem Tea Room, which I don't believe is there anymore. It used to be on Madison Avenue. And I remember being at the Harlem, pulling up to the Tea Room with my brother, and he said to me, he said, "Well, Bob," he goes, "you realize we're going to be the only men in there. And I said to him, what do you mean? He says, well, it says tea outside. So I said, well, what does that have to do with anything? He said, well, they're not going to be any men inside there. It says tea. Right. So I said, but they have great food, et cetera. And so that when you said that, it reminded me. So when we went inside, of course, we were the only men in there. And I had never paid attention to that before because I just went there for the food. It was a great environment and the prices were great. It was a great value. And I was sorry to see that they went out of business. But that kind of thing that you're talking about, that if it's not said in the right way, that so could you just explain what is it about the term yoga, if you happen to know, that feels uncomfortable versus saying men's movement? That, I think that would be helpful or enlightening.
It's more, again, just as I said, I tried yoga classes off and on over the years. I just attended one because it was being offered. I said, let me try it. It just was not an enjoyable experience in terms of me being comfortable. So the fact that a friend of mine said, hey, we have this thing we do on Tuesday nights called men's movement, you know, I at least tried it with an open mind, although obviously I wasn't blind. I knew what it was going to be. The fact it was men's movement, it was all black men, taught by, you know, a black man, that it's a different experience. And then I just began to really enjoy the actual workout itself. I mean, we're sweating at the end of it because it's a real, you know, physical workout, particularly with focus on core muscles, which are important. So it was really more just having an open mind to give it a try. And the fact that it was just become part of my regular workout experience is just, I think, a bonus or a benefit of it.
Great. And the other thing that it made me think of when you said that about not being distracted, I remember Christine and I took a yoga class at, I think it was Integral Yoga, which is in Greenwich Village. And we had been given that, as a wedding gift or something like that. And I think it was an hour class. And I was so out of shape. I remember it was about 40 minutes into the hour session, I said, that's it. I can't do anymore. And I just rolled over. And it's, you know, it's very interesting. You know, yoga is very good, but it presumes that you have to be in a certain level of fitness and conditioning. I mean, some of these poses are pretty incredible. And so then I was lying face up on my mat. And then all of a sudden, the instructor did some type of breathing pose. And then the room got quiet, and I heard like three or four people snoring. I said, oh, I think I did the right thing by taking a break. So, Tim, you know, as we wind down the interview, I just wanted to ask you this question. You're originally from L.A., and besides your international living experiences, I believe that you spent most of your time on the East Coast. Can you tell our audience, just based on your life experience, what from your perspective is the main difference between living on the East Coast versus living on the West Coast?
Well, two, obviously. First is the weather. And the best example is we used to look forward to Christmas Day in Los Angeles because if you got a bike, you can actually go out and ride it that day. And actually, that's very different than on the East Coast, where you get a bike and you wait till April when the snow is gone before you can enjoy it.
Okay.
And then the second is in Los Angeles, it's totally a car required environment where we joke we were born in a car and we assume we were going to die in a car. And here in New York City, I think I may be the only person in Manhattan that still owns two cars, even though we ride the subway, you know, to work every day. So the fact we walk everywhere, ride the subway is probably the other extreme from Los Angeles, where you literally drive everywhere to get to anything that's required in your daily living.
Great. You know, I had forgotten about that aspect of L.A., where I remember in the 70s when I was out there, and I asked about the movie theater, and when they said, well, it's a 45-minute drive, I said, 45 minutes to get to the movies? Why would you have to drive that far? They said, well, there is no movie theater that close. And then also this thing about where is downtown L.A.? You know, in Manhattan, you have a sense of a downtown, and now in Brooklyn, a downtown. But back then, if that may have changed, that there was no sense of a downtown L.A.
That's changed a little bit now, just like a lot of urban communities. They've done a good job of reinventing downtown L.A. That's where the Staples Center is now. where the Lakers play, and that's where the Kodak Theater is, where the Oscars are, and they have LA Live, which is this huge, multi-faceted venue of entertainment, housing, and everything else. So they're doing a pretty good job in revitalizing downtown LA, and now they've built housing around it too, which has now gotten out of non-affordable very quickly. But yeah, you're right. LA is a big place.
Great, Tim. So I want to thank you for being our featured guest today. I know our audience has enjoyed you sharing your wisdom.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Christine and Bob, for this opportunity.
We appreciate it, Tim. Now, you are involved with these wonderful nonprofit organizations. Could you tell our audience how they could learn more about these charitable activities and be engaged with them?
Yeah, there are two that I particularly I'm passionate about. The first is a Better Chance program, and the website is betterchance.org, one word. It provides educational opportunities to talented students of color for private and public high schools across the U.S. And then the second organization is africanleadershipfoundation.org. African Leadership Foundation supports African Leadership Academy, which is an outstanding school based just outside of Johannesburg, South Africa, that's helping to produce the next generation of ethical leaders in Africa. So those are two organizations. If you're interested in getting additional information, please go to the website.
Thank you, Tim. So audience, if you'd like to be involved with these two wonderful organizations, to learn more about them or to contribute in some way, please go to abetterchance.org or africanleadershipfoundation.org. Thank you again, Tim. We really appreciate your spending this time with us.
Great. Thank you.
Tim, what final thoughts or key idea would you like our audience to take away from today's broadcast?
Well, I always use the expression, success is where preparation and opportunity come together. So don't be afraid to chase after your dreams and just make sure you're prepared in case you catch them.
Great. I think that's wonderful, upbeat advice and very wise. So, Tim, I want to thank you for being our featured guest today. Today, our guest has been Tim McChristian, the Executive Director of the African Leadership Foundation. I want to thank you, our audience, for listening, wherever you are, in whatever time zone you are in. We welcome and look forward to your comments about our show. Please contact us through our website with your feedback and suggestions. Remember, listeners, if you'd like to experience the same benefits our coaching clients get with us and learn how to get control of your schedule or easy ways to dissolve your chronic pain, stress, or anxiety, feel free to call us at 954-900-2179. Mention that you heard our Stress Free Now podcast show, and your first session is absolutely free. Call today to schedule your appointment. For Christine Wright, this is Dr. Robert Wright Jr. of www.stressfreenow.info. Until next time, be safe and be well.